The third case in which we'll hear oral argument today is Wolf v. Department of Veterans Affairs. The law says, Mr. I want to make sure I pronounce Mr. Dizzarella? Mr. Dizzarella. Okay. You can start whenever you're ready. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right, you can begin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Your Honors, the issue here today is a relatively narrow one. Specifically, in the special case of when the VA receives a notice of death of a veteran, is a claimant with apparent entitlement to benefits entitled to an effective date as of the notice of date of death.
My understanding is that you're presenting essentially two arguments as to why you believe is entitled. You believe that the telephone call that your client made to the original office, coupled with the notation on the record that the call had been made, should establish that she made an informal claim as of that date.
That's part. And
my understanding is that even if we were to decide that the technical requirements there, the informal claim, identification of the benefits clause here hadn't been met, that you can reach into the apparent entitlement regulation for support. You can say as of the time that she made that telephone call, she had an apparent entitlement to a benefit, and that apparent entitlement should have resulted in a communication to her, which it didn't. Mm-hmm. And that the combination of that is sort of the two arguments are, you can tease them apart, although they're sort of related.
Right, yes.
My understanding is that's it. Those are the issues you're presenting.
Yes, if I understand your summation correctly, yes, that goes to the heart, yes.
I mean, I didn't see a series of other actual arguments. I wanted to be able to focus my mind very clearly on where you saw the point there.
Right, yes. And so to follow up on that, so if we look at these two regulations at issue, 150 and 155, and really what the key terms are apparent entitlement from 150, and then from 155, communication or action, the intent to apply, and the identification of whatever benefits are sought. Now, quickly, regarding 150 and apparent entitlement, the board conceded that Mrs. Wolf was apparently entitled to benefits. That's at the appendix to page 107.
I don't think there was ever a question that she was entitled to benefits. The question was when was she entitled?
Well, there's a difference between whether she was entitled and whether she was apparently entitled. I mean, she's entitled because she's getting benefits now. The question is, when she made that phone call, was she apparently entitled? Okay.
The phone call really was made in response to a request from the VA, right?
Excuse me?
The phone call was made in response to a request from the VA at that point in time?
No, it wasn't, Your Honor. What happened?
She announced that her husband had died.
Yeah, it wasn't in response to VA.
She called out.
She called at her own initiative.
Right.
And she came back to the funeral without her calling. So she called up and said, my husband has died.
Correct.
And then presented a petition.
Right, that's correct.
My understanding on the apparent entitlement issue, why you lost was that the CNBC said that the ground for the apparent entitlement was a regulation that the secretary was in the process of considering to implement.
That's partially correct.
Yeah, and that the CABC read our opinion to say that in order for the entitlement to be apparent, it has to be real, it has to be immediate, it has to be something that you can say exists right now. And as I understood the CABC, they said, well, a proposed regulation that would benefit you doesn't meet the apparent entitlement test until it's actually prompted. That's the way I understood it.
That's what they said, yes, Your Honor.
And so they concluded that as a matter of fact, your case didn't meet the apparent entitlement test that we laid down in Westbrook.
That's correct.
That's what I understand.
Yeah.
And I think they took you out on informal notice, as I understood it, on the ground that it was indisputed that your client's telephone call hadn't identified a benefit that she saw. And they made that fact finding. They said, we looked at the notation, and the record of the notation just said she called. It didn't say that she's seeking. I mean, the record at that time showed that your client's husband, the veteran, had requested an annuity benefit that had been declined, I believe, on the grounds that he didn't meet the economic test.
Right. Actually, it was a pension benefit.
Right.
Yes, it was an economic pension. Benefit.
So, the way I looked at the case was that the CAVC was saying to you on your point having to do with the informal claim, assuming for purposes of argument that the telephone call plus the notation constituted a writing, because the regs clearly require a claim to be in writing.
That's correct.
So they said, we'll grant you the benefit of the doubt on the writing requirement, but the regulation also clearly requires that the writing must specify the benefit sought. And they looked at the record and said, we don't see any claim to benefit sought. My understanding is that your argument is that when a widow calls in, you ought to make an assumption that she's seeking a benefit of some sort.
That's correct. That is my argument, Your Honor. And the reason for that argument is that if you look at 1.50, it specifically says that if a claimant is apparently entitled to pendency and indemnity compensation. So the regulation itself provides the benefits sought for in this special case when a widow called up or a widower and reports the notice of death. That from that regulation, that puts the VA on notice.
It's not everybody gets DIC, right? If you're a millionaire, you don't get DIC. Aren't there limitations?
There might be. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Well, the reason why I got at it is that maybe from the point of view of the adverse decision below, they were saying, well, we realize that you're entitled to claim compensation or a DIC, but we need to know which one you're claiming. We need to have some reason to know what it is.
Yeah. Well, in this case, I mean, I think the record is clear that these were not rich people on the application form.
The VA doesn't know that. The VA knows that the claimant's deceased husband had enough money so they didn't qualify for the benefit he was seeking. I mean, just saying, I don't quite know why. We know why the requirement for a writing is in the record because we discussed that in previous cases.
Correct.
Because otherwise, how do you know what's going in? And perhaps the requirement that you specify the benefit sought is to allow the agency to know right away, for example, if you're not, if from the benefit of their records they can administratively process. They're a lot better off. Mm-hmm. In a real world, an administrative agency knowing what it is you're asking for.
Right. And, moving on, where I am now. The board conceded that she had apparent entitlement. And if you look at Westbury, you can also see that the claimant had apparent entitlement. File indicated
she was. The board made that concession. Bring me back to that.
Sure, that's at the appendix at page 107.
Page which?
And now the secretary, in its brief.
Where page which?
I'm sorry, page 107 of the appendix.
107?
At the very last sentence.
The CAVC,
they didn't, I don't know if it's not consistent, they didn't reiterate that, but they did say that the claimant was entitled. because she's receiving benefits now. And I don't have a site for that.
Right, but the point was apparent entitlement to a DIC, right?
Correct.
And I thought the CAVC had found against you on the ground that your claim to the apparent entitlement to the DIC depended on being able to morph a proposed secretary regulation into an actual regulation.
That's right. They say there was no regulation in effect at the time, but that would be important if the issue was actual entitlement. But the issue is not actual entitlement. The issue is apparent entitlement.
That's what we went through in the Westbrook case.
Right, and in Westbrook.
We decided in Westbrook what is necessary in order to have an apparent entitlement, right?
Correct. And if you'll recall in Westbury, there was no apparent entitlement because the record at the date of the notice of death showed that the veteran and the claimant were separated. They were not living together anymore. And so that indicates that she wasn't apparently entitled.
Right, but we said that an apparent benefit can't just be a potential entitlement or a possible entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's correct.
So as of the date of the telephone call, I understood CAVC to be saying your client's claim to DIC was possible if the regulation got enacted, or it was potential, but it wasn't real.
That's where we would disagree. That's what the Veterans Court said.
Well, I would say apparent is it's only apparent when it's discernible from the file that the claimant meets the basic eligibility requirements. So the claimant here is your client, and the basic eligibility requirement for DIC, as of the time of the telephone call, depended upon the regulation coming into effect.
That's correct.
And my understanding was that the CAVC said, in this case, as a matter of fact, we think that the entitlement was only potential or possible because it wasn't discernible from the record that the regulation would be enacted. In fact, it wasn't discernible from the file that there was even a proposed regulation.
That's correct. That's what they said, Your Honor, but I would disagree with that. With the Veterans Court, that's why I'm here.
Well, the reason why I'm pressing you on this is that the government has argued that notwithstanding the quality and the skill of your argument on behalf of your client, you're essentially presenting us with two factual inquiries. First factual inquiry was there an informal claim? Yes or no? Because we all know the regulation tells us exactly what the legal requirements for an informal claim are. And you've been given the benefit of the doubt on the writing. The question is, was there specificity of request of relief sought? And I understood that the court below said, as a matter of fact, we don't think you made it. And on the apparent entitlement, no one's arguing what the law is. Westbury told us what the law is. But if the entitlement is only potential or possible, and if the entitlement isn't discernible from the file, then apparent. So it would be, in our case, factually, whether or not your client meets the legal test for Westbury. Now, if I'm right, and those are factual inquiries, then Congress did you a bad turn by denying us the authority to review the factual underpinnings of the decision.
And
Congress, when they created us, sort of cut us off at the knees, if you will, by saying that the only thing we can decide are legal questions.
Right.
Like in Westbury, there was a legal question, what constitutes apparent entitlement? And we decided it. We wrote the rule. A rule on what constitutes an informal claim had been written by the regulations, and that exists. But there's no debate in this case about what the law is.
Well, I don't know if I agree with you there, Your Honor.
That's where you have to help me.
Okay. The debate here.
You better tell me you vigorously disagree with me on the second law.
I will disagree with you, Your Honor. The legal issue here is how does 150 and 155. Work together. And our argument is that if you look at 155, which states for informal claims, if there's an informal claim, then the VA has to send claim form to the claimant so that they can submit this claim form. And if they do, if they return that claim form within 1 year, then the effective date is the date of the informal claim. And of course, that 155 also requires an ID of the benefits and an intent to apply for benefits. So our legal argument is, in the special case of a notice of death with a claim with apparent entitlement, that 155 supplies this, or the intent required by 155 and the ID of the benefits required by 155 is really given to us and conflated in 150, because 150 says when there's a notice of death and a parent entitled to benefits, you get the benefit is dependency and indemnity compensation.
You're rewriting the 150 regulation.
I'm trying to interpret it. I don't know if I'm rewriting it.
I hear you talking.
So, Gisrella, you've gone beyond your time and used up your rebuttal, but you had a lot of questions. So we will restore your rebuttal.
Okay.
We'll give you 5 minutes.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank
you. And we'll hear from the governor's comment.
May it please the court, we respectfully request that this court dismiss Ms. Wolf's claim for lack of jurisdiction. Ms. Wolf just admitted that there are two issues in this case. One is whether the phone call notifying VA of the veteran's death was an informal claim. The other issue was whether there was apparent entitlement, even if there was no informal claim, whether there was apparent entitlement under 3.150. Both of these are factual issues that this court cannot address, whether or not there was an informal claim. It's been well established, at least by the Veterans Court and certainly by this court, that whether or not there was an informal claim is just a factual issue.
Can we determine the relationship between 155 and 150 as to the appearance and also the notice requirement, the substance of the notice requirement? Is that a regulatory determination or is that a factual determination?
It would be a regulatory determination if the argument was, in any case, regardless of what the facts were, if the issue was whether every notice of death would be an informal claim under 3.155. If that is the legal issue that Ms. Wolf is raising, which is not clear from her briefs, but seems to be what she might be raising an argument here, if that's the issue, then the answer is no, because a notification of death does not inherently identify benefits sought. Ms. Wolf argues that it identifies the benefits as dependency and indemnity compensation, but any surviving spouse of a veteran is not necessarily entitled to dependency and indemnity compensation or any compensation at all from VA. There has to be at least a showing of service connection for dependency and indemnity compensation. Therefore, just by simply calling VA and informing...
Help us a little bit on the range of benefits that could be sought by the surviving spouse of a veteran. The DIC is possible, right?
Yes, pension is possible.
You could have burial costs. Burial costs, or...
I believe so.
Do you have any idea what the other range might be?
Pension.
There may be other benefits that are available, but there are none that are clearly available simply based upon the veteran's death.
Well, the VA has put a notice of the veteran's death. Is there any requirement at all to send at least a notification back to the widow?
There's no requirement other than what 3.150 states, which is that if there is an apparent entitlement to benefits, then VA is then required to send the surviving spouse an application for benefits. There's no requirement in any case when they're notifying of the veteran's death for VA to send something to the surviving spouse.
But if the agency is put on notice of the death of a veteran for which there was an application for some benefits occurring before you pass away, why not send a notice to the surviving widow benefits that might be available at that point in time to her.
That may be something VA would want to do, but it's not required by the regulations that are currently in effect.
Well, the apparent benefits that might be available, just the appearance of benefits, it means that there are benefits which might be available to the surviving spouse that might be entitled to.
Well, just
so why not send the notice out at that point in time?
Well, just because the veteran had a pending application for benefits does not mean that the spouse was apparently entitled to benefits. And particularly in this case, the veteran application for benefits was denied.
Was denied, right. Now, I understand that. But what happens in a situation where the veteran's surviving spouse is entitled to benefits and they don't know anything about it? Shouldn't they at least be notified by the agency at that point in time when the spouse dies, the notification is sent to the agency, you're entitled to file for these applications for these benefits, and the applications are here, here, and here, and going forward. Is there that much of a problem to do that?
Well, that's exactly what the regulation requires. If there's a notification to VA of the death of the veteran, and there's an apparent entitlement to benefits, then yes, VA is.
An apparent entitlement to benefits, how broadly can that be interpreted? Westbury does go to at least a limited extent.
Right. Westbury says that it has to be apparent from the file that there was an entitlement to benefits. It says there can't be some possibility of benefits. There can't be a potential that the spouse is eligible for benefits. It has to be discernible from the file that the surviving spouse is likely eligible for benefits. There's no dispute in this case that that's the standard that should be applied. Ms. Wolf agrees that the Westbury case is the proper interpretation of what apparent entitlement means. In this case, the question is whether the regulation that had not yet come into effect but was perhaps being considered by VA at the time of the notification of death.
What notice for additional benefits, different types of benefits?
I'm sorry?
Those regulations that the secretary was adopting with different types of benefits based on the United States requirement.
That's correct. And that's what Ms. Wolf is now receiving benefits based upon those regulations. But at the time that she notified VA of the veteran's death, those regulations were not in effect. If there's no regulation giving her benefits, then she could not have been a parent.
That's what regulation benefit she's seeking now?
She is currently receiving those benefits.
I understand that she wants an earlier effective date.
That's correct.
For those benefits.
Yes.
And that's what's at stake in the case, is that
That's
right?
correct. Okay. What she's saying is that at the time she notified VA of the veteran's death, she was apparently entitled to benefits under that regulation, even though that regulation was not in effect at the time, simply because VA had discussed...
So she's not claiming entitlement, a bad day entitlement, to garden variety DIC.
As far as I understand
That's what I understood in the record, but I mean, as of the date of the death of the veteran, if she had called the agency and said, I'm a surviving spouse of the veteran, I would like DIC benefits, she would, or she had written them to that effect, she would have made an informal claim for DIC, right?
That's a factual determination, but yes.
Right, and whatever the DIC was at the time she would have received. At the time that she made that telephone call or would have written that note, the so-called Agent Orange boost in the DIC hadn't taken place yet. Because it was being proposed.
Right, except that the DIC itself is based upon service connection. In order to show that the veteran was service connected, what Ms. Wolf is arguing why she's currently receiving benefits is that he was service connected because the Agent Orange that he may have been exposed to was connected to his lung disease. So the DIC would be based upon service connection.
What about Ms. Wolf's argument that, I'm not certain I understand how 150 and 155 supposedly connect, but he makes the argument that the legal issue in front of us is to interpret the relationship between 150 and 155.
I believe Ms. Wolf's argument is that a notice of death alone functions as an informal claim because that notice of death by itself is indicating an intent to apply for DIC benefits. However, a notice of death alone cannot, in every case, indicate an intent to apply for benefits because a surviving spouse of a veteran is not always entitled to benefits, DIC benefits or any other benefit. So there has to be something more than simply a notification of death in order for that notification to constitute an informal claim, and that would be identifying the benefits sought. And as the board and the Veterans Court found in this case, it was clear that Ms. Wolf's communication to VA did not identify the benefits sought. That would be a factual issue that this court cannot reconsider.
Is every veteran who dies entitled to some kind of burial payment?
I'm not sure.
Hypothetically, if in fact every veteran is entitled to a burial payment, whatever that amount is, would notification by the surviving spouse at that point in time require the VA to send an application to the surviving spouse saying that you're entitled to burial payments?
I believe if that was an entitlement for every veteran, regardless, just by the fact that the veteran died, that yes, that spouse would be apparently entitled to those burial benefits, and that therefore there would have to be an application sent for specifically those type of benefits, not necessarily any other kind.
So a telephone call to the VA at that point in time would be sufficient for those notifications to be sent to the, or the application to be sent to the surviving spouse?
Under the regulation concerning apparent entitlement, yes, if there was apparent entitlement of every veteran who died for burial benefits, then that alone for the burial benefits would constitute apparent entitlement and then would trigger VA to be required to
for that claim.
Application for that
for
specific
that
claim.
How much effort would it take the VA to send a notification once they receive a notice of death of a veteran? The surviving spouse saying he might be apparently entitled to A, B, and C, and D type of benefit?
Your Honor, I can't say exactly how much effort that would take. It's simply not required by the regulation unless there is apparent entitlement. Whether it's something that VA should do or it's a good idea for VA to do is something that Congress needs to determine or VA needs to determine and implement a regulation.
Might be a matter of public policy.
It might be.
Like the IRS might be a good idea. The IRS, you know, told you that you're entitled to a refund if A, B, and C had happened.
Sure, it might be good public policy, but at this point, the regulations only say that VA needs to send an application if they're apparent entitlement, not in any case if there's notification. There are no further
questions. Thank you, Ms. Cohen. Mr. Giserone.
If I understand Judge Clevenger's concern, your concern is that even though she might have been apparently entitled, maybe, that still there was no regulation in place when this happened.
I'm not giving that line in the BVA opinion the way that you're giving it to, because I don't know what it meant. Mm-hmm. And I have an explicit finding by the CABC that on the facts of this case, there is no apparent entitlement to the DIC as computed under the Agent Orange Privilege, which is what we're seeking.
But I would just like to point to the VA brief at page 21, the middle of the page. And it states there whether the VA is required to forward a form under section 3.150 rests upon whether a dependent has apparent entitlement, not actual entitlement. So Mrs. Wolf's argument is this concern about this regulation not being enforced at this time, January 1994, and not being enforced until June 9th, 1994, that would be important and crucial if the test were actual entitlement. The test is not actual entitlement, the test is apparent entitlement. But
even when she notified the VA objective of her husband, at that point in time, there was no apparent entitlement because the regulation was not in place, was it?
Well, see, now that's where I have to disagree, Your Honor. I think that's a difference between actual entitlement and apparent entitlement here, is that the VA decided back in December of 93, okay, we're going to service connect, we're going to presumptively service connect exposure to Agent Orange and other herbicides used in Southeast Asia to lung cancer. So they made the decision, and now just let the governmental process work, and eventually in June 9, 1994, we have this regulation. Now, from December 1993, the VA knew that this was going to happen. And if we're going to interpret VA benefit laws to benefit...
What would happen if some sleuth had determined from December and before the effective date that there was some fundamentally flawed medical results somewhere in the analysis? And so they said, we're going to put the regulation on hold and go back and re-examine the record.
Then we wouldn't be here today, Your Honor.
I know, but what did Yogi say? It's not over till it's over. But it seemed to me that the debate really was whether or not you had crossed from a possibility to something greater than a possibility. That's the line that Westbury seems to have drawn. Mm-hmm. Westbury doesn't require actual entitlement. But even for me, even another hurdle for your client is that Westbury does say that the apparent entitlement has to be plain on the record, on the file. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that there was anything in the file relating to a claim for what I'll call Agent Orange DIC benefits as of the date of the telephone call.
I'll have to disagree, Your Honor. That what was in the claims file was the veterans, Mr. Wolf's
request
for benefits. Yeah. And if you read through that claim application form, from that form gives you that Mrs. Wolf was the spouse and they were living together, so they were husband and wife. The veteran had lung cancer. He submitted this application, this four-page application, telling the VA, look, I have this lung cancer, I'm a Vietnam vet. And then he died from the lung cancer, which is indicated in that report of contact form, which, you know, is in the claims file at that very day she called, I would argue. So I would say no, that I have to disagree that I think the claims file did indicate that she was apparently entitled to these benefits.
And then the question would be, is a proposed regulation of enough sort of certainty to say that you have a apparent entitlement? So then the question, is that a legal question or is that a fact question?
I would say it's a legal question, Your Honor, because it can apply to any factual situation, other widows in similar but in also different situations. So I would argue it's definitely a legal interpretation of this regulation.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Case is submitted.